You are listening to episode 105, Steam Cleaning Blackberry Stains.
Welcome to episode 105 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 29th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my outdoorsy brother, James Furlough. I gotta get this off my chest before we get any deeper in the show. That okay. Opening noise in the opening.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that, I think of the big song right before, like, what's that game called? Red Alert starts. Reminds me of Red Alert like crazy. I feel like anybody who played Red Alert as much as me get that same feeling. Anyways, my outdoorsy brother James Furlough.
Nice. Yeah, I just got back from a camping trip, and so this is late. So just in case I get tired, I brought along some sustenance.
Some mini pillows.
Some mini pillows made of sugar. That are found in marshes. To sustain me, and, you know, so if I am like starting to nod off and then all of a sudden talking really fast, you'll know what happened.
It's because you got up on sugar.
Or if all of a sudden I'm trying to say chubby bunny a bunch of times and you can't really understand me anymore.
Yummy bunny.
Do you remember the show Wings?
Yes.
So these mini pillow jokes. I remember that. I learned that joke watching that show, because literally what it was like, the main chick gets a concussion and they have to keep her up all night, so they give her marshmallows to try to keep her up. And she like takes them, she starts to lay down, and they're like, no, you can't sleep on that. And she goes, but then why would you give me these little pillows? You know, and I was like, oh, that's so funny.
All right.
Obscure old references night. That's what I'm feeling. I was a little outdoorsy too. I completed my second Tough Mudder this weekend.
Hey, congratulations.
Tahoe, California. Yeah, man. It's pretty awesome.
Was it tough?
It was tough. It was tougher for the person I was doing it with. He is the same weight today as I was last year when I did it. And that was tough. This year it wasn't as tough. I took it at his pace, kept him encouraged and motivated the whole way. The best part, though, my whole event was, do you know what Berlin walls are? Not something that you take down in the 80s, but the obstacle.
Nope. I only know about the thing that must come down.
Exactly. So basically what the Berlin wall is just this like 12-foot tall wall. It's made out of like 2x4s or not. It's not even that thick, but like 12x1. So it's like 1 inch thick, but it's a bunch of wood.
Basically, I remember you talking about this, and you were semi disappointed that last time you could not make it over it, right?
I could not. Yeah, I didn't even really like try. Like, what's crazy about the Tough Mudder is the first time I went there, I was completely unprepared for this because the opening corral where like they like prime you to like before you run out. Like, you go up to it, and they've got it all caged in, and you're like, they're pumping everybody up in the corral, and they go, all right, go, and everybody, like, runs. You're like, cool, now let's open the doors and let us all in. And then all of a sudden, you see people clambering over this door, thinking, well, that's a door. Why is everybody climbing? Oh, no. And then all of a sudden, like, sets in. They're like, oh, that's what this is. That's where you start. But it's, like, 6 feet tall. It's not a big deal. But, like, later on in the course, they have, like, 12-foot tall ones.
Wow.
And last year, I didn't even try it because it was, like, I was exhausted. It was tough, and I was huge, and it was just whatever.
I was huge.
I was weak. Yeah. And this year, I got up, and I helped, like six people up over it, like where you brace their foot and push them up and over.
Yeah.
And everything. And once I kind of cleared the whole thing helping people, I was like, you know what? I wonder if I could do this without any help, which is good that I wanted to do it that way because it wasn't really anybody to help me. So I kind of took a couple steps back. There was a dude sitting on top of the wall that was like grabbing people, helping him up. And I was like, yeah, just let me try this. So I take a couple steps. I plant on the little brace that they have on the bottom to like get you some, a little bit of good footing, like an inch off the ground. I jump up, I grab the top of the wall. I vault myself up. I get my arms up and over it. I kicked my legs up over. I was able to get over it all on my own power. I felt like a king. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I've made some progress since last year, and it was pretty exciting. But it was a techless weekend for the most part. It was raw manly stamina and weak internet signals. which sort of leads us into the talk of this week. Because this week we won't be talking just about outdoor adventures. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he wants to throw out there.
Yes, I work for HP, but do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Husey Packard. Actually, one of the guys I went and did the event with, his last name is Hewitt. No relation.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's a thing.
I'm just going to let that awkward silence set in.
Appreciate that. If you want to follow us throughout the week, see pictures and photos from our exciting adventures and updates about the cool, you know, lifelong accomplishments that we're achieving and adventures we're going on, you can follow us on the interweb. I have a handle at Twitter. It's at Matthew D. Furlow. Or you can go and follow me on the Instagram, where I am next to Wiggin 4. NextWiggin 4.
Which, good news on that front, Jesse started listening to the audiobook.
Oh, baby.
This weekend. We drove out to the coast, which is like an hour.
Yeah.
Was an accident, so it was like an hour and a half, which was actually really a bummer because we hopped under the freeway and stopped.
Yeah, I bet it was a bigger bummer for the person in the accident.
Probably, especially since we had an audiobook, so we listened to it, and it was awesome. So then we got in that night, and then it was time to go to bed, and Jesse was like, "Can we just listen to it for?"
Oh, nice! That's what you want, man.
Like, yes, sweet,
perfect.
Yeah. So it was good. So far she's liking it. She's not fully sure what's going on, which you're like, yeah, that's
kind of the point. It's supposed to be looking at it through the eyes of a young boy.
Yeah. So it's good. So there's that. The other thing. Oh, yes. Speaking of, the other thing is that you can follow me at jamesfurlow.com and you will see photos related to said weekend. Where, for example, we went to the, what's it called, the Oregon Coast Aquarium, which is fun all on its own. But then I took an Instagram photo of this shirt that said Harry Otter. And it had a picture of an otter in, you know, wizard garb. I was like, that's pretty funny.
That's pretty funny.
I thought so. Yeah.
Did he have a scar, a lightning-shaped scar on his forehead?
Oh, my word. Hold up 1 second. JamesFurlow.com. I think it's like the top post. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's, you know, that's necessary.
He does. You know, he's wearing the glasses. He's got the wand. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's somewhere. But, yeah, it's good.
Silly otter thinks he's people. Cool. I like it. Yeah, so if you want to go and see all of the stuff that we talked about this week, because we're going to talk about a lot of stuff this week, it's going to be awesome. Get excited. We put all the clicks and links and all the stories and videos and whatnot that we talk about, we put it on our website. The website is furloughbros.com. If you go there, you'll see all sorts of awesome stuff, all the archives, all 105 episodes. Think about that. That's a full 2 years. I mean, we celebrated the 100th episode. This is a big deal because it's a round number, but really and truly, in my heart, I feel like 104 was kind of a bigger deal, which is interesting because we made no deal out of it at all. But as we've done one every week for the last 2 years, that is the 2 year mark. That's crazy, man.
And if you wish to celebrate us, check out furloughbros.com/store.
Exactly. yeah, so very cool, very cool, very cool. Very cool.
So what's up with Nokia?
Nokia?
Nokia, right?
Yeah, so basically what's going on over in Finland is the board of directors of Nokia are having a little bit of a problem because they came out and basically said, hey, when we fired Stephen Elop, I don't know how they pronounce his name. They probably announce it Elop or something like that because they pronounce things weird.
Probably. But he's American, right?
Yeah, that's a good point, yes. When they hired him, they said that his financial package, his thing that he gets as being CEO, was identical to the guy before him. Well, in turn, you know, some Finns decided to do a little investigating, actually read all the little important clauses in his contract, and it turns out that he had a $25 million payday if he was able to sell part of Nokia, specifically, you know, something like the mobile phones profitable division. Weird. To a former employee of his. If he did that, he'd get a $25 million payday, which really you sit there and you go like, so basically what they did was they incentivized him to sell the only profitable part of the company to America. And you're like, did they do that on purpose? Was that like an intentional subterfuge? Are they just idiots? Are they going to get a cut of it?
Given how the business is gone, I think we know the answer to that.
Exactly. So
So let me just make sure. It's not his fault. He actually did what they wanted, and now they're dealing with the fact that he did what they wanted, and now everyone knows about it?
Yeah, pretty much. So what they've done is they've asked Stephen Elop to go, hey, so you know how we said we'd give you 25 mil for you basically wrecking our company and selling the only part that makes any money? And he's like, yep. And they were like, how about we not give you 25 million, but like less than that? And he was like, that's funny that you would say that because you wrote a contract and I did exactly what was in the contract, so you owe me 25 mil. And then he's basically saying, no, I need the 25 million. You can't not give me that. Which is, you know, reasonable.
He can say that, and thankfully he's selling them because he'll never work for them again.
Yeah, exactly. He's walking away with 25 million, and it's like, you know, that's honestly, if I had to, you know, if I thought, now, Stephen Elop, he probably, I have no idea how to say his name. I say it differently every time. He probably has a more expensive, Stefan Elop. He probably has a more extravagant lifestyle than I do. That being said.
Look at that suit. Nice.
Exactly. I could make do with $25 million because even if you were only getting a 1% yield on that, you know, dropping that in the bank, mm-hmm. that's still $250K a year of just, you know, of principal. And you're going to make more than that.
I'm just going to put this out there right now. I'm just going to make a public statement. I don't know if we're allowed to do this or not, but I'm going to. We would sell this podcast for like $2 million.
Yeah. You know what? James did not even confer with me before making this live broadcast, and I'll tell you what. Yes, we will in a heartbeat.
Anyone wants to offer us that much money.
$2 million, yeah. We will do it for the rest of our lives for you. Just your entertainment.
Just refer back to this. We'll be good. It'll be all right.
This is basically a contract. We have signed our side of the contract. You just have to sign yours. That's it. It's done. The deal is done.
That contract being hopefully in the form of a check.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where, I mean, like 25 mil, not to mention the fact that.
Trying to say that he might be just slightly greedy by saying you got to give me the whole amount.
Well,
it would be interesting to see what they said was the alternative, right? Like, we take a little less. Okay, fine, 24.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Or they like take half a mil. You know what I mean?
Right.
Two different answers.
Yeah,
for running a large company into the ground, but running a large company.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, so it's one of those things where you sit there and you go, it's like, it's just so, I think what it comes down to is that the board of directors is in a tough spot. Because there's a tremendous amount of national pride around Nokia, and they basically, I think, I would not be surprised if the more digging, you probably never find this out in America, because let's be honest, we don't care about anybody but America. If this was not an American CEO, we probably wouldn't know anything about it, because nobody would pay attention, which is kind of awful on one degree, but it's, you know, it's the way the media works, so whatever. I mean, I can't change it, but it would not surprise me at all if you find out later on that all these board of director dudes had stock in Microsoft, you know. I'm like, this is a good idea, how about yourself, you know, something like that. I don't know, it just seems so suspicious and so, like, why would you purposefully, you know, why would you incentivize somebody to, you know, to torpedo your company like that? And that's not a mistake, I don't think. So I have a feeling that what this is them basically trying to not look awful. And Stephen a lot going, I have no reason to help you people. Why should I take a pay cut when I'm you're contractually obliged to give me this money to help you look good? I don't live in Finland. I'm not a Finn. I live in America. I work for Americans. And I'm stupid rich. Give me all the money you deserve.
I was reading this too. Apparently, he's going through a divorce, and his wife is not going to accept a reduction in the $25 million severance package.
Ooh.
Either. So he really has an incentive to not agree with it.
Yeah. What a mess. Man. Good times. Sorry, Finnish people. That's unfortunate. Especially because Microsoft's not going to do anything better with your namesake. I mean, let's be honest here. You know?
you know. Well, we'll see. We'll see. They can probably name the products better, apparently. Which, by the way, did you watch the video of Steve Ballmer saying goodbye to his Microsoft peeps?
I read about it. I didn't actually watch it.
Yeah, there's a video, I think it's on The Verge. It's of him just, he was emotional.
Oh, yeah.
He was, like, trying, I would not say he was trying not to cry, because he was crying.
Right.
But he was trying to be under control while saying it. It was pretty heartfelt. You could tell he loves the company and loves what they're doing. He had the song from Dirty Dancing, I've Had the Time of My Life, play as his final song. Which is actually pretty funny. He goes, I've always wanted to play this song, because I felt, you know, that I loved it. He goes, but it was always deemed inappropriate, to which everyone laughs. He goes, not that kind of inappropriate. Come on. And, but yeah, no, it was, which, by the way, I didn't know that they had, like, it was a stadium filled with people. I guess you can do that when everyone lives in the same city.
True.
HP never gets to do that, unfortunately, but it seemed pretty darn awesome. Just like this huge stage for a company powwow get together thing. But anyways.
Well, if you've ever been to Redmond, Washington, it's kind of weird.
That's it.
Yeah, that's true. But like actually living there for a couple of months, it's kind of weird, man. Like everybody works for Microsoft or is related to somebody who works for Microsoft. Like that city is gigantic and filled with Microsoft. It just is how it is, man.
They are.
Or there are a few people that live there that work for Steam. But that's later in the podcast.
Yeah, we'll get there. Cool. So, want to know what you can't live without?
Yes, I do, so that I can go out and buy it right now. Go on, fine, man. I'll do it during the show. Tell me what I need.
Okay, so Mint.com, one of my favorite personal finance financial tools websites, has a blog.
Okay, wait a second. If we're going to talk about Mint, I don't like where this is going, because I really want to spend my money. And Mint usually makes me not want to spend my money.
No. This is, well, yeah, we'll see. So what they did is they did a survey, essentially, or they correlated a survey. I don't remember. But it starts off with, do you think food, water, and shelter are all you need to survive? you may be in the minority. Modern Americans and people around the globe increasingly say, quote, we can't live without conveniences that didn't even exist a few decades ago. So,
yeah.
Ready for this? So here are three modern must-haves. I bet you can guess the first one.
Internet. Cell phone.
Cell phones.
Okay.
84% said they couldn't go without their cell phone for a single day.
Single day is extreme. I could go a single day. As a matter of fact, I pretty much did that yesterday. Well, that's not entirely true. I did a bit of Instagram and Facebooking, but outside of that, I didn't use it at all.
So 1 in 5 said they check their phone every 10 minutes.
Normal day? Yes. Sure. Yeah, okay.
Okay. And then 73% of American smartphone owners would feel panicked if they lost their device. You're frozen. Did I lose you? Static. Ooh, I can kind of hear you.
I would feel very... Hello?
There you are. You're back.
Hello? Can you see me?
Yes. Well, I think so.
Okay, cool.
Yep. I don't think we're synced properly anymore, but
I would be very frazzled if I lost my cell phone because it's a very expensive computer that I carry with me everywhere. I don't know if I'd completely freak out though.
Yeah, I understand. There's a part of me that's like, you know, I've got everything backed up that's important, like contacts and emails and calendar stuff, which pictures, yeah. So as long as that stuff's backed up, I don't really mind. And then 1 in 2, 50% of Americans sleep with their phone beside them, which I do. It's my alarm. So
I was going to say, yeah, I sleep with mine like under my pillow.
Number two, you ready for this?
Yes.
Facebook. So 72% of U.S. adults use social networking websites. It's kind of a duh, right?
Yeah.
When 3,000 British adults ranked things they couldn't live without, Facebook came in at number 5.
Really? Facebook?
Flushing toilets came in at number 9.
What? No way. I would give up. Okay, if I had to choose between flushing toilets and Facebook, that's like I don't even have to think about that for seconds. Seconds. Especially if I have my phone. Like,
did you notice that in Britain that their toilets tend to smell a little bit? Because Facebook's more important.
Actually, now that you mention it, yes, I did. That was the one thing we commented on. My boss and I was like, you know, it's really their bathroom smells terrible.
There you go.
Interesting.
It's consistent. Let's see here. The third one, which is the first one you mentioned, high-speed internet. 32% of college students around the globe say the internet is just as important to them as food, shelter, air, and water.
Wait, my cell phone? People rank their cell phones over the internet.
Well, they just did them in order. I don't think there's an order.
Okay, because I was going to say, to me... I'm like, I could
use... Your cell phone's lame without the internet. Yeah,
exactly. My cell phone's... Yeah, if my cell phone isn't lame without the internet, my cell phone is annoying without the internet. All it is people who want to talk to me and get me to do stuff. Like,
yeah, so 32% of college students say the internet is as important as food, shelter, and water, air as well. But 49% say it's not as important, but it's pretty close.
As important as food, shelter, and water. Now, if I...
Air and water.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, I'm pretty sure if you made me choose between water and internet for the rest of my life, I'd enjoy internet for a couple of days. No, that's interesting. I realize that there's a bit of hyperbole going on there, but I think it's indicative of... you know, what people are really saying... Really and truly, I think what people are saying is what's valuable is information. And I'm gonna be optimistic about the human race for a second. I think what they're actually saying is that having information, whatever kind of information, whether it's entertainment or Google or how to get water out of the ground or whatever, is so valuable that it's on par with water and shelter. And I think that there's a reasonable. If I was never allowed to build shelter, I literally had to live without shelter or have the internet, I'd go for shelter. But if you were saying no one will ever provide you shelter, but they will provide you internet, I was give me the internet. I'll figure out how to build shelter on my own. I could do that because I have the internet.
It's funny, too. You talk about that, and I think about, how much the internet changes our lives and how valuable that information is. The example being, we've heard stories, you and I, of our dad, where he wanted to figure out how to do something, and he talked about how he would literally go to the library and spend an afternoon researching, reading, making photocopies, and then go home and do it.
Yeah, he had to learn the Dewey Decimal System.
In contrast to me, where it was like, I want to learn how to build a fence, YouTube.com, how to build a fence. I'll admit, I watched an hour or two of video. Walked through, saw exactly how to do it, and went, okay, I can build a fence now.
Yeah. So we had to do some work on the Civic last week.
Your new ride.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I like it. And I had to fill it up for the first time today, and it was like 10 gallons. I was like, oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
That's fun, huh?
Yeah.
Makes it easy to calculate how much money you're going to spend, too.
And yes, very. But I when we were we watched one video on it before we started to take it apart and realized it wasn't working. So we're sitting there and I'm watching videos and talking to our dad about what it used to be like to figure out how to work on a car. You have to go to the library and read four books and take all sorts of Xerox copies and bring it back home. And if you didn't figure it out the first time, you'd have to go back to the library and do it again tomorrow. And we're sitting here going, we don't really know what we're doing here. So we got more YouTube videos, and within 20 minutes, we had the thing apart. And you just sit there and you go, that's valuable. That's,
Yeah. Or the other one was I was rewiring some stuff at my house, and I was like, I don't know how to do this. And so I'm literally sitting there in a FaceTime conversation with the phone propped up, and he's going, okay, put these two wires together. Now put these two wires together. Now do this. Okay, flip it on. What's that do?
Right.
And I'm just like, you can't. I would have hired someone for $80, $90 an hour. Thank you, Dad, to be able to do that. But because of the internet and video conferencing, got literally instant support. Someone who could see me and walk through, and there was no guessing involved. But
let's put this into context. What's the one building that every president has named after them? One type of building?
A library?
A library. A source of information and entertainment. A collection of it that people can go to. And every single one. And they've been doing it for generations and decades and centuries. Why? Because that is one of the primary important things that we as a human society do is bring information together and collect it and use it as a resource, I don't know. It's an important resource. They oftentimes, it's easy to say Facebook. Oh, Facebook, that's important as flushing toilets, or more important than flushing. That's crazy. But I think, in principle, the idea that the internet would be that important.
Let's add some quantitative thoughts around our qualitative observations.
Okay.
So it continues on, and it talks about how we use our phones, Facebook, and the internet. Okay. So with phones. 30% of Americans check their phones while they're having a meal with other people. I'm like, only 30, huh? I must know a lot of those.
It's totally not me. No.
40%, or nearly 40, of Americans check their phone on the toilet.
Only 40?
Yeah, only 40. Let's hear. 1 in 4, so 25%, respondents had set up a meeting with a person with whom they were having an affair via text message. pretty crazy. You okay there?
I'm just thinking. I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. Okay. They set up. I thought you were. I was like, well, how do you have an affair via text message?
Having an affair via text message.
Right.
And then 1 in 4 Americans have sent a provocative photo to their partner via their phone.
You mean the dreaded sexting?
That's the one. So Facebook, 46% of internet using adults post videos and photos they've created online. Okay. Which again seems low, but fine. 91% of American teens had posted a photo of themselves on Facebook.
Selfie.
Again, sounds a little low.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Let's see here. 8 in 10 engaged couples have used the internet to research wedding products and services.
That's
only smart.
Yeah,
seriously. And then 4 in 10 U.S. adults took part in political activities via one or more social networking sites during the 2012 campaign. And then 35% of social media users have used these tools to encourage voting. So,
I don't encourage voting via social media because it's really obnoxious when anybody ever does it.
Well, 40% of the people do. So there you go. Well, I guess 35%, 40 somehow use it. Anyways, how we use the internet. 72% of internet users sought health information online in a 12-month period.
I count.
I've done it for myself, for our dog as well. Super helpful. Let's see here. 97%. That's almost 100. So 3% are probably lying. Yeah. Of consumers, use the web to research local shopping. Yeah, there's 3% are lying on that one for sure. Which again, normally it's the other way around, right? I'm shopping for something locally and I research it online.
Yeah.
But I can see it goes the other way around. I guess I wonder what counts for that. Like, does looking up an address of a store count as researching?
Yeah.
People, you know, because then you're like, well, yeah, that's just, which is super helpful. Let's see here. 19% of Americans made an online appointment for a service other than a reservation at a restaurant in a 6-month period.
Say that one more time. I lost you after three words.
Yeah, that was a hard one. So 19%. Okay. Of Americans, they made an online appointment for a service other than a restaurant in the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
In a 6-month period or something.
DMV, man.
So I would imagine like a DMV, doctor, maybe, car service perhaps.
Yeah.
Let's see here. 32% of higher education students in the U.S. take 1+ online courses.
Nice. I counted in that.
Yeah.
And I failed.
And then how about this?
I'm terrible at online classes.
This is super true. This is true. 9 in 10, 90% of house hunters have sought homes online.
That makes sense.
Zillow was created in 2005, and they have over 100 million homes in their database now that they are tracking data for. So, apparently we do need a little bit more than food, water, and shelter.
So I was listening
to
this
radio. We also need the internet, Facebook, and your phone.
So I was listening to this radio show that I listen to every morning, and they were talking about the statistic about people who don't use the internet, and it's a pretty small minority of people who don't use the internet at all. And they like broke out that group into like three different like people who like why don't they? And one was like, one was like, it's too confusing. One was like, it's too expensive. But there was a group that said, there's just nothing relevant on the internet for them.
Nothing relevant.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay.
I want to know what it is they do in real life.
I know, right? I need to meet these people. How can you come to that? I mean, how can you spend 20 minutes on the internet and say there's nothing? There is literally something for everybody. I mean, they're like, it's like that old quote, anybody who's bored of London is bored of life, you know. Come on now. How can you What? I can't even wrap my head around that. I mean, okay, I get it if it's not really useful, but come on now. Come on now. Nothing.
They're talking explicitly about the internet, not just the computer, not connected to the internet.
Correct.
The internet.
Just the internet. All the websites there within.
Who showed them? Someone made a mistake, right? They're like, they obviously were like, there's this thing called Google. Just type what you're really interested in and just watch what happens.
Yeah,
click on
seriously.
The first link.
Anything. God. That's, yeah. What are you
nothing relevant
about?
For me.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they just like 3D things, you know, and the internet doesn't really do that really well. I don't know.
I'm only really interested in...
That's the way of saying I don't want to have anything to do with it for some reason. Maybe, yeah. Okay, I got it. Maybe they're interested in being off the grid. And the internet clearly is not that. In fact, it's like the other opposite of it. Like, I'm interested in my privacy, and I hate the NSA.
Yeah, no,
okay,
no.
Well, maybe.
It's a controversial position, but yeah.
I do not like communicating and exchanging information and ideas with people.
You know what I really dislike? Computers and human beings. They are uninteresting.
Yeah, such a pain.
You know what the thing is, though? I'm pretty sure there's a forum somewhere on the internet for people who hate people and computers.
Yeah,
ironically. Connects you with people
really.
Who...
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Anyway, so I want to talk about something cool that happened this week.
So we're talking about the cool thing, which that could be multiple things depending on your filter.
I don't know. Do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Because I think mine will... I don't know what it'll do. Oh my gosh, I'm trying to type and it's not working.
Yeah.
All right. So, this Monday, there was an announcement.
Announcements. A terrible death.
Has entered into a letter of intent with Fairfax Financial to be bought.
Private. To go the way of Dell.
Yeah, essentially. They're done.
They're done.
We kind of knew. We knew last week. They canceled their call, which was just kind of comes off as we're angry and we're taking our ball and going home now.
Yeah.
So apparently Fairfax owned 10% of BlackBerry already, and. And they say that they're going to, you know, they're going to pay $9 a share.
Now, what is Fairfax? So, some sort of telecommunications company that's going to position themselves well for a competitive attack against other mobile cell phone companies?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know. They are a financial holding company.
Yeah. Basically, guys with a bunch of money is what it comes down to.
Yeah, essentially, too much
BlackBerry,
money, apparently.
BlackBerry needs to go private, and they think that there's still enough room for another competitor in the market. And
well, it's interesting, like, listening to, you know, to the way that it's structured, it's hard to tell. Like, for example, so they entered into this thing, but Fairfax is not bound to complete the deal, nor are they held to the $9 share price. So they've got like 6 weeks to conduct their due diligence to, you know, look into BlackBerry, see what it's about. And then they can modify the price that they're willing to pay or just back out completely. I think they don't owe them much, if anything. It'll be BlackBerry who owes them money if they decide not to sell. Oh, yeah, they are an insurance and reinsurance and investment company based in Toronto. Yeah, so they could walk away, and they wouldn't have to pay any penalty. If BlackBerry – see, BlackBerry's got the 6 weeks now where, you know, one of the theory is they can go shop themselves to competitor bids. And if they get offered a competing bid, then they must pay $157 million to Fairfax. for denying them. So it's one of those where it's like Fairfax really cannot lose in this deal, other than the fact that they already own 10% of BlackBerry and they're already losing.
I gotta say, their problem is that they're invested in BlackBerry.
They've already lost the big race. Yeah, so you know, one of them is they put in a deal with a hope of BlackBerry finding a better bid so that they can kind of recoup some of their investment instead of just watching it shrink down to zero. You know, so they're like, you know, they're trying something, right? Oh my gosh, we're going to lose money. Let's do something. And then the other way is they, you know, they genuinely think that they can do something with BlackBerry, which the head of Fairfax, his name is Prem Watsa. The other thing I believe that's going on here is by them becoming a privately held company, they now are able to get around the whole Canada doesn't want to sell to non-Canada companies because now they're private. And so it may open up an opportunity for them to get bought by an Asian company who would like to buy them but can't. But what was super interesting is they were interviewing – again, this guy's name is Prem Watsa. That's probably not how it's pronounced.
Probably not, but, you know, whatever.
It should be. It should be. This dude is he's a fanboy, I guess, is how to pronounce it. He's a BlackBerry fanboy.
So nobody's ever introduced him to Apple?
He says that BlackBerry is Canada's greatest technology company. Which is like, okay, cool.
Okay.
And then he goes, the brand name, a security system second to none, a distribution network across 650 telecom carriers worldwide, a 79 million and shrinking subscriber base, enterprise customers accounting for 90% of the Fortune 500, almost exclusively usage by governments in Canada, the U.S., and the U.K., a huge original patent portfolio, an outstanding new operating system developed by QNX, he said this a while ago, and a $2.9 billion in cash with no debt. He goes, these are all formidable strengths as BlackBerry makes its comeback. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think – he likes BlackBerry. I don't know.
You know what I think his problem is? I think he owns a tremendous – he has a huge amount of money invested in a company, and he's trying to figure out how to not have it just become nothing. And
he sounds like a sports franchise owner, you know? The Giants are going all the way because we're the Giants, and
you
we're
guys,
awesome. And yeah, so what if I own them? You know, I'm not biased. I think they're the best.
Yeah, you guys literally didn't even make it in the playoffs. But he's going to stay and sitting there going, we're going to win the playoffs. You're like, dude, you're not in the playoffs.
It's okay.
What's your problem?
Now, he does go as far as to say, is BlackBerry going to turn around in 3 months, 6 months, or 9 months? No. He said this last year. He goes, if you're looking 4 to 5 years, we make our investments over 4 to 5 years. So, you know, he seems to think in 5 years – the turnaround. Well, I guess we're already a year in, so that's going well. The other thing that they're like, he might decide to just sell them for parts later on down the line, you know.
I guarantee his plan is not to turn around BlackBerry the company. That just doesn't make any sense. It just what's there? What is there?
This guy's a total. I would not be surprised. You know, he's coming out saying all this stuff, which is, you know, he's supposed to. But I've got to imagine behind the scenes, he's like, oh, please, someone come along and offer to please, somebody, please, somebody.
Yeah.
We'll take our $157 million. We'll get our 10% back. It won't be a complete loss. He was talking, and they have enough other holdings where BlackBerry could go belly up, and, you know, their shareholders are fine, but.
Yeah, it's still a disaster. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and,
awesome. So, anyways, BlackBerry's maybe they got. I guess we're a week into the 6 week period now, or almost a week in. So there's that. We'll see.
You know, I kind of hope it goes private and it sticks around, and you get to keep hearing about BlackBerry coming out with their new products and the empty husk of a company, you know, continues to walk around like a zombie undead for next couple of years, you know, keeps entertaining us. I hope that happens. I don't think that will, I mean.
So we, because I know you love doing this, we talked about this a little bit last week, but I want to touch on it just a slightly more. I'm calling BlackBerry. They're not fully dead yet, but I mean, you know, we know where this is headed.
I'm not dead yet.
We've seen it with Palm and with Kodak and, you know, some others.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways Nokia is going away as well because they're getting bought. What do you see as the next great, you know, collapse?
I can say Nokia was the obvious one. Motorola could have been a good pick, but gosh, I don't know, man.
They're done, right? I mean,
they've been bought. Man.
Dell is kind of, you know, I don't know what's up with Dell anymore. But
you know, it's funny. I feel like Dell's in one of the weird positions where it actually could come back around. You know, they figure something out. Dell's not an idiot, and you know, if he's got an idea and he's got a vision and he can kind of make it work, you know, it's not necessarily the end of that company. And there's still smart people working for him.
That's the question. You know, I feel like
I got a feeling he does.
He doesn't really. See, I have the opposite feeling. Otherwise, he would have just done it.
I don't think so. I don't know. I feel like, you know, I feel what's going to happen is I have a couple of friends who work for Dell, and I've all told them the same thing, which is to say, if you're willing to put up with the bumpiest ride of your entire life for the next 5 years, stick it through, because I think something's going to happen.
Really?
That, you know, well, because I just sit there and I go, you know, I think there's magic out there somewhere. The tech companies move, the tech industry moves so fast. In 5 years, there's going to be a completely new market of something. And if Dell can be right there, like when it happens, exactly. Who knows what stupid thing we as consumers are all of a sudden going to feel like we need. And if Dell
better than Facebook in the toilet.
Exactly. And, you know, if all of a sudden we feel like we need something and Dell is in a position where they've got manufacturing, they've got customer support, they've got engineers, they've got salespeople, and they're just, you know, they've just been biding their time and nothing to lose. And they've just been biding their time to throw themselves in behind something. I got a feeling that that's all it's going to take, you know. And it's like what fundamentally got Dell out the gate? It was good customer service. It was fundamentals, you know, of what makes a good company, and then they jumped on a good product at the right time. And that's what got them ahead. And how did they lose it? Their customer service, you know, got terrible. HP's got wonderful, and position switched. You know, and even though
they stopped innovating, essentially. They found something that worked
And figured that was good enough. You know, it's
phoned it in. Which, by the way, I saw a Dell printer recently. Man, those things are ugly.
It is the and that is not biased at all. You know, but it's the
it was a laser jet. I'll admit it. I don't represent HP though. I don't represent HP during this podcast.
It's true. I know. I know.
I'm influenced by HP during this podcast, but I don't represent. Oh yeah.
Yeah, see, and the thing is with Dell, I get the feeling that there's something. It's not they're not a lost cause. I don't think they're a lost cause. It's going to be really rough if you work in there. And if you're talented and smart and can be gainfully employed by someone who's a little more stable, I'd say go for it. But I'm optimistic for Dell. So that being said, who's next? What's the big company that falls? The thing is, and this is what it comes down to, these are the quintessential cases of the innovator's dilemma, right? What is the innovator's dilemma? It's once you come up with something innovative, you make it awesome, you game, you come on Monopoly, the marketing guys come on top, and the product guys go elsewhere, and then all of a sudden somebody comes from outside of left field with a new product, and, you know, wham, bam, you know, you fail because somebody out-innovates you. That's what the book is about. Steve Jobs claims that that's, like, his favorite book. And if you hear him talk, almost everything he talks about, you know, or many times he mentions ideas that are from that book. So basically, Innovator's Dilemma in Dell. The innovator, Dell, kind of took a backseat, and he's basically sitting here saying that we are in a place where we cannot innovate because we have something to lose. We have something to prove to our investors. If we take it private, we can take risks again. Jobs was allowed to take risks because he was a maniac that everybody just trusted for no particular reason, because he had this weird way about him, and people trusted him and let him take risks. So I think the best way to analyze
this is his ideas might have been risks, but he, you know, the products looked awesome, right? Yeah. They were finished products. It was just a question of, is anyone going to like them? But,
right.
You know, I feel like, you know, too, that we're sitting in a place where, you know, from a phone standpoint, consolidation is clearly happening. One could argue it's probably already done. There might be one or two. You know, HTC might need to get sucked up by somebody. From a tablet space, you know, all the players, they're all huge. There aren't any ones who just do that, which is part of the, you know, the interesting part of it. You kind of got to be doing multiple things now, create that ecosystem. You can't just do a phone or do a tablet. You got to kind of do multiple things, which is bad news for Pebble. But then it's like in the movie space, you know, clearly Netflix is creating waves and Hulu's doing their thing too. I feel like Hulu could be 10 times better than it is, and they're just struggling with, you know, making decisions via committee. And it's only because they have an amazing idea that they can get away with it and, you know, bumbling and still be successful, and which should tell you something. I think, like, newspapers are – you know, you just name one, you're probably right eventually. You know, they're struggling with their stuff. You just got to, but at the same time, I feel like, all right, we're in this period where everything's kind of been set and things are in motion. At least it feels like for the stuff that we tend to follow, you know, there aren't a lot of, man, is this the next thing? Is this going to replace something else? I don't know. You know, we're stable in that regard,
which is fun because that's when disruption occurs, right? I mean, that's the impending excitement. So I guess the question is like, where can you look at a company that's clearly like lost its innovative edge? And I keep coming back to the big boy. I keep coming back to, I think clearly there's one company who is gigantic and bloated.
What are you talking about? They just did a new product, and it's awesome. It's the second version of it.
Yeah, and everybody hates it already. nobody's going to go out and buy the Surface.
But they're going to get a new CEO in the next 12 months.
And that could change things. That could honestly change things. But the problem is that they are...
And they just bought Nokia. Nokia.
Maybe they'll change
their name now that they're an American company.
Maybe. They already said they're going to get rid of the Nokia branding.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So Nokia is done, effectively, from a world stage perspective. All that's left is the mobile media apart from the Finns, and nobody invests in that. It's a dozen. Anyways, the thing is, and this is where I come from, is that if you look at this from the, you know, from an innovator's dilemma thing of product guys coming up with innovative new products, like, what has Microsoft really done in the last decade? You know, when you look at all of their products.
Dude, their Office stuff is amazing.
But it's the same
love. Problem.
I keep coming back to
it. What is it? Word and PowerPoint, they're okay. Excel.
I keep coming amazing. Back to Excel is not bulletproof, though. They're not doing anything that nobody else can't do.
Really? But no one else is doing it. That's the.
And I still think they are executing incredibly well on it. But they've not done anything. They've not changed anything. They've not done anything. And on all they're doing is they're trying to – they're sitting there trying to protect it. Protect it. Protect it. Just protect it. Protect it. Protect it. Protect it. Protect it. And I think what's going to happen is that all of a sudden somebody's going to come out with something. Somebody's going to out – is going to come out with an innovation. And they are going to have an incredibly – and the innovations that you talk about aren't – better fields for controlling, you know, for or better equations.
Well, actually, so I'm not going to give the name of the software we use because I shouldn't, but I do know that our team has started using a new tool that honestly is an Excel replacement. I will be honest, I keep fighting it because I still think Excel is better, but. That's because I'm a power user. But for, like, my boss and a few other people who aren't quite at that level, they're using this new tool. And it literally is you put your data in a – it's in an Excel spreadsheet, but it's really just a dumb database. Essentially, you got your fields and then rows of data. That's it. And then – which I can't figure out how to hook that up to just a regular database, which is killing me, but whatever. But then what it does – makes it so that you can then take that data and analyze it. Technically it's just a fancy pivot table, but it's got charts and selectables, you know, so you could be like, give me a worldwide or just give me Americas or give me Europe or give me these three combined things. Look at just these printers or look at this time frame, you know, just give me these price bands. And it makes all these selectable things so that someone can go through. You just have a pile of data and go, here you go, have fun. And it's literally point and click. It makes all this stuff for you. You don't have to necessarily know how to do it. And at least for my boss, he goes, yeah, this does 95% of what I want. And he goes, yeah, for that last 5%, I need Excel. But he's like, this works pretty good.
Let's think about this, though.
Which scares me.
Every time we talk about Microsoft, and you talk to I feel like I could talk to anybody about Microsoft on this, and they would say that is the last bastion that has not been breached by anybody in any way is Excel, where Excel really stands alone as this anchor that keeps the Office suite and all of Microsoft as necessary. Everything else. You may not like the replacements as well, but there are generally accepted replacements. For example, OS X is a replacement to Windows for most people.
Yeah.
Windows mobile options are obviously there are a plethora of other options. All your databasing, all your security stuff. Everything that's out there, there is something out there that everybody else does as well or good enough that they can be replaced. When you go into the Office suite, whether it's Pages or Slides or PowerPoint or whatever, there are multiple companies that build things that are as good with innovative, better solutions, whether it's cloud, you know, sorting or better formatting or better this and better that. Really and truly, you come down to one tiny piece of the product puzzle that nobody does better than Microsoft. How long is that going to last? They're not improving it. They're not making it better. They're not doing anything that's blowing people away. They're not saying, hey, we're going to give it away free and put it on the cloud, and we're going to make it so that nobody will ever even try it because it's just so amazing and wonderful that we're the best. We're unquestionably the rulers, and we're going to keep this. They're not protecting it. They're protecting it as a source of income when the reality of it is that they should be moving beyond that and say, you know what? That's done. We're going to give it away free. We're going to move on to making money on something else. But they're not making money on anything else.
They don't have anything else.
Exactly, yeah. And that's my point. And I sit there and I go, I feel like until they decide that Excel isn't good enough as a company, that Excel's a dead end, and really decide that they need to find something else and take a risk, then it's a company that's just impending doom. As far as operating systems go, Windows is shrinking, not because it's as a part of the market share, not because they're selling fewer, but because Windows is not on the most the best-selling devices in the world. You know, phones and tablets, those are outselling everything that Windows is on, which means that on all those tablets, all of those phones, if you need to do word processing, if you need to do PowerPoint, if you need to do, they're using something else. Databasing, they're using something else. And, you know, the biggest thing is that the one thing that we keep coming back to with Microsoft that's saying, well, there's one part of the company that is really kicking butt and taking names. It's you know, it's Xbox. They are holding their own. True. And our next story, I think, is going to make this next 4 years for Xbox the last of the glory years, unless they really, really change something up. Because,
well, the way I had it interpreted was, you no longer need a PC for gaming.
Nope.
Which, you know, was another thing where they held on really well, you know, because you'd have gamers who would want to get their high-end PCs that they could, you know, game. But that's will be less and less now. And I'll let you.
Not just less and less, but I think it's completely negated because Microsoft, or not Microsoft, good Lord, the other gigantic Washington company, Steam, the boys up north, they created such classics as Half-Life and Half-Life 2. and it's they last year they came out with this thing that they called the Big Screen. It's basically an interface that worked with Steam that kind of went full screen, and it was sort of like, what is this? What are you guys doing? Like, no one uses this. They're like, basically, plug your computer into the TV and then hit this button, and then it's like, it's an interface for your TV, basically. We realized that the interface for your computer on your TV is terrible because the resolutions are all off and everything. It's like, there's a reason why the platform ecosystem exists, is basically what they were saying, is because, by and large, it's a different interface in your living room. Lower resolution screens, bigger lower resolution screens, and, you know, controllers like your Xbox and stuff. So they wanted to create something that would allow you to interface with that in a better way, and they called that the Big Screen. But it's sort of, nobody used it because it was like, what is this? Come on, guys. So Monday, they decided, they made this big announcement. Kind of let everybody, they're much about generating buzz and giving little Easter eggs and hints and stuff. So they basically said, hey, this week we're going to make three big announcements, and the first one's on Monday. And so Monday, Steam announced their very own Steam operating system, which is kind of exciting. It's a big deal. And basically what it is it is a custom build of Linux. And which is cool because it's open source and everybody can get access to it and program for it and do all sorts of fun stuff to it. The Linux community flipped out. They're super stoked about this because the Linux community loves this kind of stuff.
That's a good flip out.
Oh yeah. No, it was, yeah, they were very excited because basically what, yeah, cause a couple of weeks ago, actually it was like only a month or two ago, Gabe, the CEO, owner, president, dude of, the guy in charge at Steam
of Valve.
Yeah. Keep calling it Steam, don't I? You're right. It is Valve. Wow. So the guy in charge at Valve basically said, hey, I think you all should make video games for Linux. And the video game companies were like, Linux? Okay, I guess if you say so. And there was kind of like a little bit, but nobody was going to do it. And basically it was priming the pump for this big announcement, which is to say, guess what? We're building an operating system. And it's going to be one designed not for computer screens, not for monitors, but for TV screens. Lower resolutions, cool. Bigger screens. Yeah, and it's very exciting because it was like, you know, it's open. It's got all sorts of crazy APIs. They got their huge library that, you know, their cross-platform library. You buy the game once, it'll work on any operating system. You can download it to multiple blah, 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 blah. Very cool. It has this, like, family sharing thing that they're getting into and a couple other cool features.
Right.
And they were talking about, like, you know, we're also going to, you know, we're going to do what the other companies are doing, too. You can play movies on it. You can play music on it. You can play all sorts of things. It's Linux. You can download whatever you want. You know, you do it. It's fun.
Can
you know?
I play iTunes videos on it?
Not quite yet because iTunes doesn't work on Linux. I know. This is my hesitation.
Or the kernel.
Yeah, so Unix is the kernel that both of them run off of. Linux is the build.
Man, that sounds cool. I remember I read that and I was like, ooh, boy, that sounds pretty cool. How much is the operating system's free?
For free.
So if you've got just like a computer, how does that work? You just like load that on and then plug your computer VGA style or
so this
HDMI
is the fun,
style
so
into
this
your
is
TV?
The fun part.
How does
this
that
is,
work?
This is the fun part about the Unix kernel is it runs on the x86 and AMD architectures, which is cool because if you own a computer, that means it'll run it, which is very exciting.
Convenient.
Yeah, very.
So you could dual boot or you have to – does it matter?
You can dual boot.
Put it on a USB stick, make it happen?
Probably.
Probably. That's cool.
It kind of depends on how big it is, but you can do that with Unix or Linux. There's no reason to suspect that you won't be able to do this with the Steam operating system. And so basically what there's –
it may not be able to
fit
the game data, but yeah.
Right. Well, but if it can fit the operating system, you can just plug it into a computer, boot off of the stick, and then all of a sudden we're cooking with fire. So this is a big deal. This is
That's
exciting.
Cool.
Very, you know, and yeah. Everybody was like, yeah, sure, I'll take that out for a spin, whatever, man. It's super easy,
man,
low risk, high yield. Yeah, very cool.
So let me just make sure I understand how this would work. I know what I'm doing here. I'm half setting you up. So I could. Let's say here, I've got my Mac, right? I could essentially dual boot into the Steam OS, have my Mac connected to my television somehow, and then I would use my keyboard and mouse to play the game while staring at the big screen. That would work, right?
Yes.
I don't have to buy any new equipment. I could just download the OS. I guess assuming I already have a cable, and I'm good to go.
Yep.
That would work?
Yep.
Cool.
Very cool. So, this is
That's
pretty awesome. Thank you for setting me up, because as we already pointed out, we foreshadowed just like Valve foreshadows. That wasn't the only announcement they made this week, because like a day and a half or 2 days later, I don't even remember when the next one was, they made another big announcement, which was what they called the Steam Machine.
Is that for cleaning clothes?
Yes, pretty much. No.
Getting rid of wrinkles?
This is for playing video games. So basically what they said was, hey, we came up with this awesome operating system. Everybody can download it, put it on whatever hardware you want. But guess what? You want optimized hardware. You want it all to work. You want it to be seamless, and you just want a little powerful little machine that you can plug in your computer, bang, bam, get it done, easy peasy. We got a deal for you. We're making a console. And basically, there's no price yet. They're going to build these really high-powered ones for people to use and play around with, that you can, like, if you want to be part of the beta, they do this big contest, and it's going to be kind of cool sounding. I'm gonna try to get it. I'm not going to get it because nobody ever gives me anything free. You should try it because you'd probably get it and then would ignore it as soon as you got it, you jerk.
True. Well, the problem is you'd have to make 10 Steam friends, which – I have never actually downloaded Steam. So.
Oh yes, yeah, that would be difficult. Yeah, what are there? It's join the Steam Universe community group. Number one, agree to the Steam hardware beta terms and conditions. Number two, three, make 10 Steam friends if you haven't already. Four, create a public Steam community profile if you haven't already, and then. Five, play a game using a gamepad in big picture mode. So basically, you know. Try it out and see if you like it.
Yeah, that's a good way to filter, you know, because some of that stuff, you're like, dude, we want people who will actually try this,
participate
who are
in the beta.
At least minimally invested in us.
Right,
yeah.
We're only giving this to 300 people. Come on now. So it sounds pretty
probably
fun.
Probably wouldn't
sounds
choose
pretty...
me.
Yeah, probably not.
That's cool. That's pretty awesome.
It is very
Making
awesome.
Making
big...
a machine.
And the big thing here is that this is kind of like the Surface in that they're basically trying to show OEMs, hey, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And they're hoping that people will pick up. But the big thing here, and I think what's kind of exciting about it, is that it's like you can build custom rigs too. You know, you don't just have to build. Oh, I just accidentally hit a bruise from yesterday, and that was incredibly painful.
I thought you just thought of something brilliant.
No.
But that doesn't sound like that's the case.
No. That was just stupid.
Where's the bruise located at?
Just right on my shin.
Ah.
It was a bruise I earned myself literally as I was climbing into the corral. I nearly, that first wall that you climb, I slipped on it and nailed my shin on it.
Wow.
Yeah, it still hurts pretty bad. Anyways, so back to the Steam. So they want to build, so they've got this picture where they've got a bunch of different size boxes and stuff, and like, you know, this idea
but
that...
you could build your own, right? You're not dependent on third-party
game console builders. You can build your own. Yeah, very exciting, very cool. So you can be as expensive or not expensive as you want it to be. So this is awesome. Thing is, Valve wasn't done yet. Because they had a third announcement, and everybody was like, Half-Life 3. They're going to announce Half-Life 3, and it's going to be only available on this operating system. And then they were like, no.
That's not how they roll.
No.
Platform.
Yeah. Basically, what they announced was another piece of hardware. They announced...
Oh, man.
A new controller. Oh, baby. And it actually sounds awesome. A gamepad. A different kind of gamepad. We set out with a singular goal: bring the Steam experience in its entirety into the living room. We knew how to build the user interface. We knew how to build the machine and even an operating system. But that still left input, our biggest missing link. They came up with this kind of cool idea, which, you know, most gamepads have a bunch of buttons and some joysticks. And nowadays they have little screens in them, little like capacitive touch screens. And basically, like, we like the capacitive touch screens. We like the buttons. We like the sort of like two handle grip thing. They're not going with the N64 three hand grip thing for those of us with three hands. I know. Why not? Come on, guys, bring it back. But the big thing that they are changing is instead of joysticks, they got little touch pads with trackpads.
That's cool.
And they got little ribs on them, and everybody was like, what the heck is with this, man? Like, the big thing with joysticks is that they've got haptic feedback. You can feel it as you move your thumbs around. They're like, don't worry about it. We got your back. We're coming up with the best haptic feedback yet. And they got these little plunger things that vibrate the pads, and so you can get all sorts of really dynamic. And they're like, these things, the articulation on these vibrations are so fine and so are so easy to control that we can vibrate them in such a way that the game pads themselves, the trackpads themselves, since they're cones, can be vibrated at audible frequencies and start to generate sound. And like, as a parlor trick, you can use them as speakers. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
So they're saying, yeah, these things are like really fancy. It's got a little trackpad, and they've got all sorts of open APIs that people who a little screen so that, like, when you touch the screen, what's on the screen shows up on, like, the main monitor, and they've got all these different things that they're doing, and they're trying different stuff out, but it's completely open source. How it's built, what all this dimensions, all the circuitry, everything. They're like, please, make something better. Make third-party options that look identical to it. We don't care. Do something. Impress us. You know, they're really hitting this like open source thing. But the thing is, and what I keep coming back to, is they're going to build this entire ecosystem. And if you don't want to mess around with it, you don't want to have, you know, you don't want to play around. You just kind of want it to work. You're just going to buy a Steam box, a Steam machine, and the Steam controller. I'm inclined to think that I will do that, because I don't buy video games anymore unless it's through Steam, with incredibly rare exceptions.
So you think that, and they're coming out with this next year, correct?
Yeah.
And I read one thing where it was talking about, some other game developers did have an opportunity to play with the controller ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so far the feedback has been like, yeah, this is actually pretty cool. It works the way they say it will. Nice. They haven't hyped it up too much.
That's awesome.
You know, which is good to hear. They're like, the only bad part is it requires a USB. It's not wireless. Which you're like, really. But it sounds like to me, this is going to be a pretty big. I mean, this is a pretty big entry into the living room.
There's one last piece of this puzzle that really has been kind of left off the table, and that is the best graphics that you can possibly get, graphic performance that you can get, is in the PC. I mean, it's out of this world how much better the graphics performance on a PC are compared to consoles. And it's almost exclusively because of the NVIDIA graphics cards. They're crazy expensive, but the performance is incredible. Thing is that NVIDIA has been literally at one point during like a big conference flipped off the Linux guys, because the Linux guys were complaining about how they're like the biggest blight on the entire Linux ecosystem is NVIDIA. And NVIDIA was like, whoa. And so they're not friends. And in an unrelated announcement this week, NVIDIA was like, so yeah, guess what? We're going to start writing drivers for Linux so that y'all can chill out a bit. Like, thank you, finally. Linux community was like, you know, elated about this news. And everybody was like, yeah, that had nothing to do with Gabe Newell coming to you guys and saying, hey, guess what? Get your act together. And like one of the, you know, there's like three video game companies in the world that could, you know, walk up to NVIDIA and tell them to be different. And they would say, okay, we'll be different. And so NVIDIA, yeah. And so what that actually means, the big implication on that one, is that if you're willing to drop $800 on a video game console, you can have better graphics than any other generation, current generation system out there. Which, and what's the big selling point of an Xbox over a PlayStation 4? Or, you know, why did everybody want the 360 instead of, you know, what was out there? It's because exclusive content and graphic performance over the PlayStation 2 and the Nintendo Wii and everything. Mm-hmm. And then when the PlayStation 4 came out, what was its big selling point? Exclusive content and graphic performance. You sit there and you go, they are going to be left in the dust by other companies that are coming out there with these huge games, which are these huge performance boosts, which really, you know, the big question becomes, now it's going to become entirely and exclusively about exclusive content. What games do you have that nobody else has? And that is where Steam or Valve as a company really gets to step up and do what, Microsoft, they get to do what Microsoft does with Halo, which is own Bungie. they don't control Bungie anymore, but it's that same principle where it's the, you know, Steam or Valve doesn't have to make Half-Life 3 for Xbox, but they make it for Steam, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, and by the way, we'll give it away free if you're using one of our operating system or something like that, you know, and all of a sudden everybody's going to go out and want to, you know, get on the bandwagon. And I sit there and I go, you know, exclusive content is the sort of thing that can really move these things forward. And the big thing about this, and this is the thing that I think is really being undersold, and this is the sort of insight that the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast brings you, but it's Linux. It'll run programs that run on Linux, which means that everybody who's developed media players, video, audio, all sorts of that stuff, you build interfaces and you can bring them in. And what's going to happen, I really think this is what's going to happen, is the whole idea of your media center, you know, what is the Xbox? Except it's, you know, they keep describing it as Xbox One. They named it as the one system that you need in your living room. Right. That will tie all your media together. PlayStation 4, they're not that emphatic about it, but that's basically what they were going for too. Nintendo's the only one that's like, we make video game systems. We don't make entertainment centers. But the thing is that for media centers, that's what people use. They use Linux. Like, you know, you sit there and you go, there is a community, a thriving community of media center guys that have stuff out there, and all of a sudden they're going to see their user base explode. There's going to be huge moves to try to get on into the, you know, the SteamOS ecosystem to build these really powerful plays your iTunes music, plays your iTunes videos, plays this, plays that, you know, connects to this, connects to that, connects to this, does this, does that, does this. And like, and, you know, how long until, you know, somebody goes, it has AirPlay. Why do you need an Apple TV? You know, how long until it has Chromecast, you know, software built into it? How long until you sit there and you go, like, you know, there's potential here. There's serious potential here to really become a media center that plays video games. And especially because now you're going to start getting OEMs competing against each other, trying to build better systems for cheaper, as opposed to what's going on with your exclusive, you know, locked boxes, where Xbox and PlayStation, or, you know, and where Microsoft and Sony are the only OEMs. And it's, yeah, it's a cash cow, especially with the licensing fees and whatnot they get. But this is like, this was Microsoft's strategy with the PC: license the intermediary, allow the hardware guys to build whatever hardware they want, allow the software guys to write whatever software they want, and build the communication bridge, build the platform that will communicate, will bring a bunch of different hardware together, and couple that with the software, and then make money in between. You know, Google's problem is that they're, you know, they decided to do it, give it completely free, and I figured have it a hard time monetizing some other aspect of it. But that's why is Android taking off? I mean, Android's killing Apple in market share worldwide. They're not killing them profit share, but that's because they never figured out how to monetize it in the first place. And the thing that Valve has going for them is they've already monetized it. They already know how much money they make on it. Now they just need more people to run Steam. And they're doing it, you know, and you sit there and you go, there's absolutely no reason to think that this won't follow the same trend of gaining market share. And they make money every time you buy a game off of their platforms. And, you know, I don't play video games and I buy games off of Steam. Like, I don't even, it doesn't make sense to me. How do they do that? You know, but that's what they do. And I sit there and I go, this actually, I think, will in 5 years really change the face of what it, I think the next generation of video game of consoles will look dramatically different because of this new competitor coming in. Because I just sit there and I go,
you've got high hopes.
Well, it's anytime you see this strategy, it forces people to change market share. And the thing is, it you know, people, the closed ecosystems lose market share. And unless you're just an incredible competitor that is by far better, you're better at everything, it slowly eats away at, you know, your overall performance. And, you know, and I sit there and I think that – I sit there and I go, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the only reason anybody's going to go for one over the other is community at this point. You know, which community am I a part of? Or if there's a game that's like, I need Halo. Or I need this. And I can't, you know. And the thing is that that most people that I talk to, they sit there and they go, it's the community. It's the online community that I'm into. You know, either I'm invested in the PlayStation market or I'm invested in Xbox Live. And you sit there and you go, now you're going to give people a 200, you know, it's like, you know, those little microcomputers, you can buy them for like $200-$250, right? You load Steam onto it. You give it a cool Steam decal. You plug in an HDMI thing. You get a gamepad. And for like, you know, if you could get like $200 for the whole system, whole kit and caboodle, and now you can play Steam games on your computer, then that's all they need. It's all they need is people to buy two. Go ahead, buy your Xbox One. And next Christmas, buy a Steam box. And then in 2 years, replace your Steam box with a better performance one, you know. And then a year from then, Xbox will come out with their next generation console. And you'll sit there and go, yeah, but I already play most of my games on Steam, and it's a really high-performing thing. And it's like, as long as they can get people to start, you know, and that's going to be, I think, going to be the big trick for them, is to go the Apple TV route of, as long as it's cheap enough, I'll get one, why not? You know, but they're going to be able to hit all the in-between cycles. They'll be able to do what Android does, which is, you know, every 8 months there's a there or every like 2-3 months there's another. This is the best Android phone in the on the market. You want this, you know? Whereas Apple's every year. Well, the development cycle is even crazier with video game or with the console systems. It's every 4 to 5 years they come out with a new console, and the Steam people developing Steam boxes are going to come out with better ones, better, you know, big marketing campaigns every single year. Dell, HP, Asus, you know, all the big players are going to come out with consoles every single year that are cheaper and better performing.
HP got into the Steam Box OS.
And there's absolutely no reason to think that they won't. Why wouldn't they? I mean, especially look at the market share right now. They're trying to find anything. And all of a sudden, HP gets to go toe-to-toe with the Xbox and really compete. You know, and
man, I wish I were an exec at HP. We wouldn't be able to do this. But I would totally, man, I'd be all over that. I'm like, come on, guys.
It's you sit there and you go, this is going to be big.
Pretty
man.
Box
this,
for the living room.
This is going to be big, and I really do think so. And I mean, and it's funny. It might not be Steam. It might not be Steam. I think they're the best position at this point to do it. But the idea that why is it that there are only three companies building closed ecosystems, that is what we expect to win in the media center? You know, I mean, and it's funny. You know, just wait for Samsung. Just think about Samsung.
Oh, they would totally do it. They made like 20 different copies. One of them is gold because
I know. Samsung's going to get on this game. They're going to, hey, this is a good idea. Why wouldn't they? I mean, it's just I think Valve knows it, man. They know it, and they're just like, this is going to be awesome. And it's going to be one of those things where in 5 years, you know, Microsoft is going to – the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One are going to seem so old and decrepit. And, you know, and all you really need now is all you need is the content guys to realize that, okay, there's a market there. You know, and what's going to really kill them, what's going to really kill Microsoft, what's going to eat their hearts out completely is when guys decide that it's – when developers finally decide – that it's worth more money to build a Linux version of the game before a Windows version of the game. And then what's left in Windows?
Excel. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they could... yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. Can Steam do DLC type stuff?
What do you mean?
You know, like in-game purchases.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's a huge part of the ecosystem. The whole hats thing with so in-game purchases with like the classic one is or the quintessential one I should say is hats in Team Fortress. Everybody, they don't do anything. They don't give you any perks. They just it's just a costume thing. You like $5 for the latest coolest hat. And then I got. When I was playing Skyrim a lot, I got the expansion packs. It was just DLC, and you could buy it through them. And then the other great part about it is the mod committee, the modding community is like built into Steam.
Wow.
So it's like, oh man, it's a great community, and it's just so much more freeing and powerful than anything that Xbox and PlayStation are doing. When you just sit there and go, there's potential, man. There's potential. They could really make a difference. They could be the difference that makes a difference. So I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens.
I think
it's a big one. And I fully intend on buying something in 2014 when it comes out. I want to try out one of these new gamepads. You know. And I can't tell you if it'll be a Steam box or if it'll be one of those little microcomputers that cost like $200 at Fry's and just boot, you know, Steam OS onto it and just go that way. I don't know. Depends. It depends on how much it costs, really. But, oh, it's exciting. I'm excited.
Sweet. Next year, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had something in here about Boeing.
Oh yeah. So this is the other cool thing that happened this week. This one's just kind of crazy.
Should I play
Boeing
the video
decided or? Boeing No.
Go ahead.
It's not that good. I'll describe it. So Boeing basically, they said they took these F-16s, these old fighter planes that we built. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they've always wanted to be able to do, and this is kind of difficult to do, is they basically want to give fighter pilots the feeling of being able to take out targets. What is it like to actually pull the trigger, have a missile fire, and blow up a plane? Problem with that is that normally that kills the pilot.
As a general rule.
So the government basically gave them clearance to take a couple of F-16s, a handful of them, revive them. They were retired F-16s, refurbish them, put a little money in them, get them running again, and then install an automated control system in them that basically replaced the pilot, turned them into dogfighting drones. And now what they'll be able to do is be able to
fly
them up.
That's so awesome.
I know. They'll be able to fly them up have them go around and basically fight the dogfighters, and they'll be able to train with them for a while and then eventually blow them up. It's just like, that's kind of fun. And what's awesome about it is this whole thing is pitched as a learning tool. It's going to allow us to learn what it's like to go against dogfighters in a real live fire scenario. And I sit there and I go, okay, I really want to know who's going to be learning more from this experience. Is it going to be the dogfighters, or is it going to be the computers? And pretty much everybody kind of came to that conclusion at the same time. They're like, so basically what you're telling me is we got all these cool dogfighting, fighter jets out there. And now you're going to put a computer in there that'll be able to perform all awesome. And one of the cool things is the F-16s are capable of taking turns that pull 9 Gs, which is enough to knock out a human being, if not
kill. Oh, but there is no human being.
There is no human being. So there's absolutely no reason why the F-16s can't suddenly pull maneuvers that no human can keep up with.
That's
why?
Awesome.
Yeah. They're actually going to have to throttle back the performance of the planes to make them more human-esque. Which, how much you want to bet they're really going to do that the whole time? How much you going to bet that they're not going to at least do, a couple of tries? Or they're like, yeah, let's put it on expert mode. See what happens. and I guarantee you that this is what this is this is a they're going to blow them up eventually. They are going to fire missiles at them, because it's a little, I feel like we're still at the point where we're like the whole drone thing, like we as a country, we're still kind of weird about it. Like, I mean, we drone people to death all the time, but there's something about having dog fighters and human beings in that whole scenario where we're like, we're not having planes fighting other planes. It's different. It's like, it's different. And I feel like basically what they're saying is we want to be able to try out new algorithms, try out building, what is it going to take to build the dog fighting planes? And this is a really good way to,
yeah, that's cool,
to try it all out and, run a couple of tests.
Try and design and see what happens, huh?
Exactly, especially on an old dogfighter, and try something out, do something big, learn a tremendous amount, and if they fall out of the sky, nobody cares, because it's like you're gonna blow them up anyways, and then at the end of it all, blow them up, which will be exciting, worth it, and worth something in its own right, and then they'll take the F-32s and they'll put a computer chip in the F-32s and just see, what can we do with these? Especially because the F-32s are weird in that they describe the F-32 as like the pilot, pushes the stick forward and it's just a joystick. Like, whereas the F-16s, there's a lot more like direct connections between the steering, the control stick and the actual flaps and everything. Whereas with the F-32s, our most recent fighters, pilots, they're like, it's basically just a joystick. And you tell a computer, and then the computer figures out how to do it. Because one of the weird things about the F-32s is that they're incredibly unstable. Like, they're like, if you didn't have computers making micro adjustments all the time, all the time. They just fall out of the sky because it's they're wow. very unstable. But the reason why that's important is because you can basically have them be going like straight forward, like turn a couple of flaps, the thing falls out of the sky, and like suddenly it's going backwards. Like the things are incredibly dynamic, and they have computers that literally make sure that they don't kill the pilots when they pull these crazy maneuvers. But what if you know, take the pilot out of it? Now all of a sudden you have this plane that can do insane maneuvers. Maneuvers that no human being could ever keep up with. Literally. I mean, it just would be physically yeah. impossible because it'd kill you to try to. And these things are going to be flying around taking out airplanes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And so it's like, go America. You know, jeez, it's good to be on our side. But this is definitely the first step in that. And it's
wow.
Yeah. 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 Kind of exciting in a, you know, we're going to go kill people sort of way.
Decidedly less exciting after that. Rumor mill is the next move for Nest, the thermometer company run by Fidel, the former Apple dude. It's going to be a smoke detector.
Yeah. A smoke detector. Cool. What are they going to do? What are they going to do to make it all fancy like?
Well, one of the things they'll do is, I love it though, like easy to control from like a smartphone and stuff. So like, you know, you could be like, oh, I'm cooking something. I don't want it to go off right now. So you could set a timer. So like, you know, don't go off for the next 2 hours, something like that. If it does go off, you could get it where you get an alert on your phone.
Nice.
For you. They also talked about how in order for it to save energy, it might just, how do they describe it, like Bluetooth connect to your Nest, which is then hooked up via Wi-Fi to the rest of your house. And so your thermometer becomes kind of a central hub for these different devices. There's probably something else related to it.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, they also were talking about maybe doing a subscription service to where, again, you know, if it does go off, they actually call the authorities for you.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, so just one more little maybe. This is a rumor mill, I guess.
I'll bet it's coming.
But it can make sense. For Nest. And they
look say, cool. The only thing that you did, the big thing for them is the, you know, smoke detectors are pretty affordable, and the Nest thermostat's not. So I wonder if they're going to go for their kind of stick with the super high end to say, hey, these are for like really nice houses. But whereas the Nest thermostat, most houses have one thermostat. Most houses have one smoke detector per room, which is why they tend to be pretty cheap. But I wonder if they'll go for, you know, if they'll go for $200 each, or if they'll try to get them down to 50 each, you know, I wonder what they'll do with that. But it seems it totally makes sense. I mean, system on a chip is what they're good at, right? And self-learning programming, simple interfaces, and elegant design. And there's no reason to think that you couldn't build a $50, $100 system on a chip that's got Wi-Fi and it's got the little, the smoke detector circuitry, which I actually know how it works, but it's kind of boring. I won't get into it now. This brief aside, if you ever want it, the engineering guy on YouTube, he's got a channel. He explains stuff like that. It's awesome. But he actually explains how smoke detectors work. It's pretty interesting. but you know, yeah, I could see them.
Yeah. The other idea was to do the door lock, which I hope they don't right away since I ordered a Lockatron and I don't get it. I think I get it in October this month coming up. So
maybe.
Yeah. Cause once again, I didn't choose the color that they do first. I chose another one.
Of course not.
I can't help it. But yeah. Oh, the other thing, it will have a carbon monoxide, have a carbon monoxide detector in it, which, at least in Oregon, if you have anything that's related to gas, if it's like an attached garage, gas stove, whatever, you're required to have one inside the unit. So I don't know what California. Probably California's probably more strict than Oregon.
I think it's California. It's just you need them. I don't think there's any time that they wouldn't want. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other thing they were talking about is you just wave your hand in front of it, and you can silence the alarm.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, yeah, like that'd be neat. But yeah. So nice. There you go. Like cool. I said, decidedly less cool than drone fighter pilot jets, but I actually stand a chance of seeing that and playing
that's
around.
That's true. it's kind of a brief, real quick aside. China Mobile released advertising this last week that basically was saying iPhone 5S and 5C are going to be sold. And get excited about it, which everybody was like, nobody's going to make a big announcement about that. Y'all are just going to start the advertising machine, which makes people think that it was kind of a leak and wasn't supposed to happen. But good news for Apple, China Mobile with their 750 million users.
Wow.
We'll be getting the iPhone soon. And probably Apple's going to have to churn out a whole bunch more gold iPhones because China loves their gold, which is why Samsung, in classy form, came out with their brown and gold and pink and gold, or their gold Samsung Galaxy S4s. Yeah.
So,
which everybody was like, brown and gold? That's so ugly. Who would do that? I was like, looking at my headphones. I don't know who would do that. So it's a terrible color combination.
Terrible.
I think they're good color combinations. They're actually like really like common gold and pink and gold and brown. Like, that's used all the time. What are you people talking about? This is why you don't talk to tech people about fashion. They have no idea what they're talking about. I say, as a tech
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Jeez. Anyways, another thing is, hey, good news. As opposed to being part of China and communism, here in America, we have competition,
which is
exciting if you're into heads-up displays, because Google Glass has got a competitor, and they've just shipped their first 50,000 devices. They got a huge investment from Intel, and they're kind of making hints about maybe getting an iOS connection going on. Basically, it's the same idea. You got these cool looking. It's a little bit different. They're more into like the sports performance type thing, but it's the same in principle of what it does. It's like a glass heads up thing, and then it's got a little like screen on it that gives you all sorts of controls. It doesn't have all the cool Google-ness to it, but they look pretty awesome, and they're trying to sell a ton of them. And I wanted to bring this up because I figured you're gonna want to know about this company, the company's name is Recon, R-E-C-O-N. They got two right now. The Jet in the Snow is what they're coming up with. And tech specs. It's got a 9-axis sensor, 3D accelerometer, gyroscope, magnetometer, which is how you get your compasses, pressure sensor. It's got a 1 GHz dual core ARM Cortex A9, which is actually a decent chipset. It's got a widescreen display. It's got Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, GPS, micro USB. It's got an HD camera. It's a nice little thing that they got going on here.
They got apps?
No. Do they? Probably. I don't actually know how that works. But you can order now if you want. They're $600 each, so they're kind of expensive. They're not going to try to do what Google's going to do or trying to do, which is to bring it to the masses, go the Henry Ford version and make it cheap and affordable.
Yeah.
But they're pretty cool. Biggest problem is they're not shipping quite yet for just normal folk like us.
What?
But they do
50,000 and not to normal people.
I know. It's crazy. I think it was like a big pre-order thing. It was a, you know, they did an initial one, So the next set of orders are going to go out, or normal orders are going to start shipping in February of 2014, which is a mere 5-ish months from
now. That's coming up.
Yeah, that's not bad. And for six bones, man, or you can order more than one, and that'll cost twice and three times as much. Why buy one when you can buy two for twice the price?
That's right.
So
I'm watching this video they have on it that's showing it work. It's so unlike Google Glass, instead of being high, this one's low. And
yeah.
It looks like you're kind of stuck with the glasses. You couldn't, not for indoor use, it looks like.
Yeah.
Or can you take the actual
lens out? I don't know.
Lens, thank you, that's the word. I don't know. But it looks, you know, for outside stuff, it looks neat.
It's cool, man. I want to try it out.
So they're not cheap. $499?
No. Not cheap. $599.
Well, I thought they were taking $100 off.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
To celebrate their Intel Capital partnership.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty cool, man.
That is cool.
Yeah, so.
I like it. I like it. I'm not quite ready to pull the trigger on buying one yet, but
I'm waiting for Google Glass to come out to make my final decision on not buying one, because I'm buying a Steam Box instead.
Oh, come on. Just get them both.
You know what? Okay.
They're essential items. They're both essential items.
Exactly, man.
More important
than
breath itself.
Dell could get into the HUD market.
They could.
Heads-up display.
They could.
It could be the next big thing.
They won't, but they could.
I don't know that they won't.
I do know. Come on. Come on.
Okay. They probably won't.
We all know it. Cool. Cool. Cool.
Good times.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of good stuff happening. So... Everybody, oh wait, I gotta get my photos and everything all ready to go. I know, it's tough. So everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow. My muddy brother is Matthew Furlow, and so we will talk next time. Excelente.
You don't know how much of a dork I am?
How much of a dork are you?
I read an entire article talking about that the internet connection tone that we play there, about like what all the different tones were and how they work and the handshake communication, like what was going on during all those tones with the phone company to give you connection to the internet, all the synchronization and everything. It's a long article. I don't know why I read it.
You're a dork. That's why.
Word.
A nerd.
Nerds.